morning, everybody, and thank you once again for allowing me to learn with you Sunday morning. The topic for this morning is one that is obviously very, very relevant, whether one drinks on the cholesterol or not. But either way, you have to know why you do it, why you don't. So regardless of what one's personal custom is, the information itself is one that is very, very, very relevant. We'll begin with the basic starting point, which is, of course, that non-kosher milk, milk that is from an animal that is not kosher, is obviously one that is forbidden to drink. And the very first source, Gemarim Bechoros and Daf Vav and Aveis, tells us how do we know that milk from a non-kosher animal is forbidden to consume. So the Gemara in Bechoros tells us, the Rabbanan, hai gomo, my obdilei. What did the Rabbanan do with the word gomo? The Gemara says in Bechoros, chad le'asar atzmo, v'chad le'asar chalavo. Twice the Torah tells us one is forbidden to eat the camel. Why twice? So once the Gemara says, teaches us that gomo itself, the camel itself, is forbidden to consume, to eat. And the second time the Gemara says, gomo teaches us that even the milk of the gomel is also forbidden to consume. Now, there have been some who've noted that, grammatically speaking, although I defer on this to the dictuk experts in the crowd, grammatically speaking, we probably should say Chalev Yisrael instead of Chalav Yisrael. Same way the pasuk says, Lo Sevashel Gedid B'Chalev Imo, in the milk of its mother. So Chalev Yisrael, the milk of a Jew, as opposed to Chalav Yisrael. But I guess for simplicity purposes, we'll just call it what everyone else calls it, which is Chalav Yisrael. Okay, so very good. So we know that milk of a non-kosher animal, one is not allowed to drink. So where does Chalav Yisrael start? So the starting point is a Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah. The Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hey, tells us that there are a number of things of goyim, a number of items that belong to goyim that one is not allowed to eat, even though it might not be forbidden to derive benefit from. One is not allowed to eat these items of the non-Jew. What are they? So the first item listed in the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hey, is Cholov Shechalovo Oved Kofavim V'Ein Yisrael Ro'edim. Milk that was milked by a non-Jew, which a Jew did not see at the time that the cow was milked, that milk, says the Mishnah, is something which is forbidden to eat. Okay, that's the source of this halacha, Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hey Amud Beis. Cholav, Shechalavo Akum, V'ein Yisrael Ro'ehu. The Jew doesn't see the milk being milked by the goy. That milk cannot be consumed. It's asur ba'achila. What's the reason for this? The famous Gemara, and a very, very important Gemara, tells us as follows. And this is a very, very basic starting point for a lot of the discussion. Source number three, the Gemara explains what this Isser is based on. The Gemara says the following. Cholav l'may nechush lo. What's the problem with drinking the milk of a non-Jew? It's milk, it's milk, it's kosher, it's kosher. So the Gemara says, what are you going to tell me? You're worried that maybe the non-Jew switched the milk of the cow for the milk of the camel? So the Gemara says, that can't be the concern. Why not? Im yishum echlufe, if you're worried about the non-Jew switching the milk of the cow for the milk of the camel, that's not a problem, because tohar chiver. Kosher milk, milk of a cow, or other kosher animals, is very white. You can tell, it's from a kosher animal. Tomei yarok, but the milk of a non-kosher animal is darker in color. It's maybe a yellowish green, a little darker tinge to it. So for that reason, the Gemara says, what are you worried about cholav of a non-Jew for? You're afraid he's going to switch it for treif milk? Look at it. If it's white, you know it's kosher. If it's darker, it's yellowish, greenish, then you know it's treif. You can't drink it. So what's the concern? The Gemara then asks, okay, so what are you going to tell me? Maybe the concern is the following. Maybe the guy knows that I can tell if this milk is kosher milk or not kosher milk. So what's he going to do? He'll mix it. He'll take half cow's milk, half camel's milk, put it together. The color won't be so far off. You won't be able to tell from the color alone. But as far as the issur of consuming non-kosher milk, that's going to be a problem still, because you have a container of half camel's milk. So maybe that's the problem in drinking non-Jewish milk, that the goyim might mix two types of milk together. So the Gemara says, this is a very important point, If you're worried about the guy mixing two types of milk together, where the color won't give away the trick here, so what should you do to determine if it's kosher milk or not? So the Gemara says, Nekum, why don't you just try to coagulate the milk? Turn it to cheese. How's that going to prove if it's kosher milk or treif milk? So the Gemara says, the Omar Mar, because Mar said, Cholav tahar omeid, cholav tameh eno omeid. Cow's milk or milk of a kosher animal can be coagulated. So if you can coagulate the milk and turn it to cheese, you know it's kosher milk. But non-kosher milk, says the Gemara, that cannot be coagulated to cheese. Non-kosher milk cannot be turned into cheese. So if you're ever unsure about whether you can drink your next door neighbor's milk, just try to coagulate it. If it turns to cheese, it's kosher. If it doesn't turn to cheese, it's not kosher. That's the Gemara's assumption. When I first read this Gemara, I was wondering, you know, scientifically, what does science say today about this fact? Can non-kosher milk coagulate? Can non-kosher milk not coagulate? So obviously, first I have to figure out, well, what makes milk coagulate? What turns milk into cheese? So it's actually very fascinating. The Bria, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Bria, as follows. What's the purpose of coagulation? Coagulation, of course, means when the milk solidifies somewhat. What's the purpose of milk solidifying? So I happened to track down some guy on the web by the name of Dr. Douglas Goff, who, I know I never heard of him either, so don't worry. He is a professor at Guelph University. Guelph is a place up in Canada, Ontario, for those non-Canadians here amongst us. And Guelph University has this website, Dairy Science and Technology. So Dr. Douglas Goff explained, he said that the purpose of coagulation is that when a baby calf nurses from its mother, it has to absorb all the nutrients from the milk that it drinks. And in order to give the baby calf time to absorb the proper nutrients from the milk as it passes through its intestinal tracts, the milk coagulates somewhat to slow it down as it passes through the GI tract to give the baby calf time to extract the proper nutrients into its bloodstream. How does it coagulate? So the way it coagulates is that in the baby calf's stomach, there are a couple of enzymes known as chymosin and renin. Renin also called pepsin. And as the enzymes react with the milk, milk contains in it a protein called casein. And when the enzymes in the calf's stomach react with the casein molecules in the milk solidify, coagulate. That is how the milk coagulates. It's the casein molecule, the casein protein in the milk that coagulates to solidify the milk. So the question is, what about non-kosher milk? Does that solidify? Does that coagulate? So you would think, well, if it's got the casein in it, if it's got the molecules that solidify in regular milk, then non-kosher milk should also solidify. So Dr. Douglas Goff, when I asked him this question, emailed me back and he said, doesn't really know, you know, strictly speaking, what the scientific facts are. I guess he never tried it. But he says, logically he thinks, he says, camel's milk has been used in dairy production for a long time. People have made yogurts from camel's milk. So he would think that it should solidify. And he says he thinks that even pig's milk, he would think, has a high protein level, so therefore it should solidify. And in fact, I noticed afterwards that the Melamed Laho of W.C. Hoffman and his Shuvas also reproduces a chart that he pulled out of some sort of chemistry science book, which gives you the protein levels of different types of milk. And he says you have to figure out the metzias. Does it really coagulate or not? So what's the metzias here? What really happens? So ironically, whether this was a message from the Shmaim or not, I don't know, but as I was learning the Sugya of Mechavrusa, he happens to be drinking a Snapple. And if you recall, Snapple has these little, you know, quick facts on the inside of the cover there. So lo and behold, I'm learning the Sugya of Mechavrusa. He opens up the Snapple and says, hey, look at this. Inside the Snapple cover is quick fact number whatever it was. Says, camel's milk does not coagulate. Whether that's a message from the Shemayim, or Shemayim, or Shemayim, or Shemayim, I don't know. But you know, then again, Snapple's not exactly my idea of, you know, scientific research. So how does Snapple know this? So I looked a little more carefully, and Baruch Hashem, I found that in our poskim we have a discussion of this issue. So the Ritzvah, right there, Masechta Avodah Zarah, on that Gemara, the Ritzvah says the following. If you look at source number 4, you have a line there. The Ritzvah says in source number 4, Masha Amru Tame Eino Omeid, when the Gemara says that Tame milk, camel's milk, does not coagulate. So the Ritzvah says, Lav the Eino Omeid Kla. Doesn't mean it doesn't coagulate at all. The Hafazinon Dekoi. We see that camel's milk coagulates. You can't dispute the facts. Rather, says the Ritzvah, Ela Sherubo Eino Omeid. Most of it will not coagulate. Berubo Naasen Esyubi. Most of the milk, when you try to coagulate camel's milk, most of it stays liquid. So what's Ritzvah saying? Ritzvah saying the following. When the Gemara says if you want to test Goy's milk to see if it's kosher or not, try to coagulate it. If most of it coagulates, you know it's kosher. If only a small amount of the milk coagulates, you know that it's treif. Because treif milk, says Ritzvah, will not coagulate in large proportion to what you have in front of you. That's the Ritzvah's approach. I then noticed later that later poskim, the Radvaz, also asks the same question. He says, how could the Gemara say that treif milk doesn't coagulate? He says, I have edus ne'amonim, I have trusted edus from Yemen, that in Yemen they've made butter and milk products from camel's milk. So the Radvaz says, what the Gemara means is that non-kosher milk is not going to solidify to a hard consistency like a block of cheese. You can make a softer texture milk product, like a soft butter or a soft yogurt. That you can do from non-kosher milk, but you can't make a hard cheese from it. Okay, so whichever approach you take, the Gemara is assuming, and now we see correctly so, that even if treif milk will somewhat coagulate into a soft consistency or in small proportions, it will coagulate, but you can tell if you have a container of milk and you coagulate it, if it mostly coagulates to a hard block of cheese, it's kosher milk. If it doesn't coagulate in large proportions to what you have to a hard block of cheese, it's not kosher milk. So we turn back to the Gemara in source number 3 for a minute. What was the Gemara saying? The Gemara was saying the following. The Gemara was saying, so what's our concern now? Back to Chol Yisrael, Chol Avakum. What are we worried about? God gives you some milk. You're not sure, is it kosher milk? Is it treif milk? Is it a mixture of kosher and treif? Very simple test. Coagulate it. If it turns to hard cheese, you know it's kosher milk. If it doesn't, you know it's treif milk. So what are you worried about? Why do we have this Chol Yisrael all together? So the Gemara in source number 3 says the following. The Gemara says, in the second line, eat the kaboya legvina. Okay, if you want to eat cheese, great, you're right. Hachinami, not a problem. You want to eat cheese, you have non-Jewish milk, coagulate it. If it coagulates entirely to a hard block of cheese, you know it's kosher milk, not a problem. What's the problem? Hacha b'mayaskinan, what's the issue here? The kaboya lekamfa, you don't want it for a block of cheese. You want the milk to pour into your food, cereal or a dip, a milk dip, whatever the food was. You didn't want to coagulate the milk. You wanted it in liquid form. So then, how are you supposed to know if it's kosher milk or treif milk? You don't want to coagulate it. So Gemara says, well, you can still try the coagulation test. How so? V'nishkal mine kali v'nekum. Take a little bit of the milk. Make a little bit of cheese from it. And then see if it coagulates. And the rest you can drink. And the Gemara says, that also won't work. Why? Because kevan debitohar nami ika nisyuve to lokaimi, since even in kosher milk, when you coagulate it, there's a liquid portion that doesn't coagulate, leka lameka malada milsa. You can't tell from this test. Meaning, we wanted to know, why does the isra of Chol of Akum exist? A goy gives you some milk. What are you worried about? So we answered, we're worried that maybe there's a mixture of treif and kosher milk here. The Gemara asked, why is that a problem? Take a little bit of the milk and try to coagulate it to cheese. If it coagulates, you know it's kosher. If it doesn't coagulate, you know it's treif. So the Gemara's answer, that's not going to work. Because even when you coagulate kosher milk, there's a portion of the milk that never hardens. So therefore, if you try your test over here to see if I'm going to coagulate this little bit of milk, is it going to harden or not? It's not going to prove anything. Because whether there's liquid left or not, that's the way it is in kosher milk also. What is this liquid portion of the milk that doesn't coagulate? What is that all about?
Whey.
Whey, right. What is whey?
The liquid part. part of the milk.
Liquid part of the milk. So if you open up your yogurts, sometimes you see some water on top of the yogurt. What's that water doing in my yogurt?
Waste.
So the gurus at Danon.com were asked this question frequently enough to be worried about it. So they posted on their website, frequently asked question number 9, I think it was. What is that water stuff on my yogurt, Danon guys? So they responded, don't worry, that's whey. If you want, you can stir it back into yogurt. It's healthy, it's got minerals, it's got all sorts of good stuff for you. Or if you don't like it, spill it out. That's a good problem. But what that is the whey. Whey is that watery-like substance that when you coagulate milk, it does not coagulate. It separates out and remains in liquid form. Okay, so the Gemara therefore says that bottom line, our problem with the non-Jewish milk is that you can never tell is there a mixture of non-kosher milk in here or not. That's the Gemara's bottom line. And the Gemara then takes a step further, and the Gemara in source number 3 concludes by saying that I'll even tell you a step further. Maybe even if you want to use it for cheese, you still have to be concerned that the milk has a mixture of non-kosher milk in it. Because even when you coagulate cheese, what happens when the enzymes that you put into the milk coagulate the casein protein molecules in the milk, those casein molecules solidify and they trap some liquid in between them. Now, obviously in our cheeses, we don't find that too often because the cheese manufacturers then heat the cheese and cut the cheese and drain all the liquid out. But I guess apparently in the times of the Gemara, they didn't always do that so carefully, that there was an actual concern there'd be some liquid trapped inside the cheese, and that's what we're worried about. That might be trace milk. So that's Gemara's bottom line, that whether you are just drinking the milk, maybe there's a mixture of non-kosher milk in there, even if you're coagulating the cheese, maybe there's some non-kosher milk trapped inside the block of cheese that didn't coagulate. Okay, that's the Gemara. Now, before we get to the next step as to how to apply Paul of Yisrael to more of a contemporary discussion, we need to first take a look at the Gemara's discussion of cheese made by a non-Jew. So far we've seen milk of a non-Jew, and we're worried there might be some non-kosher milk mixed inside it. Now we have to take a look at the Gemara that discusses cheese of a non-Jew. And there's two separate issues here. Because aside from the concern of eating, drinking milk of a non-Jew, the Gemara says also, in Avodah Zarah, second parak, that cheese made by a non-Jew is also forbidden. Why is that? Why is the cheese of a non-Jew forbidden? The Gemara gives a number of different explanations. The Gemara says, well, one opinion was that cheese made by a non-Jew, now this is assuming that there's kosher ingredients in it, and still, cheese of a non-Jew is going to be forbidden to eat. Why? So the Gemara says, because maybe, in those times they had snakes that would circulate in the residential neighborhoods. Maybe a snake in the non-Jew's house, the non-Jew is not so careful with leaving his food out and his milk out. Maybe a snake deposited some venom into the non-Jew's milk, and that venom is now in the cheese. That's going to be a little dangerous. Okay, that's the Gemara's first suggestion, that the non-Jewish cheese is going to be problematic because there might be some snake venom inside that cheese. Now, obviously, as we're going to see, if that's the only concern, so maybe today it's not so relevant. Now, who has snakes circulating in residential neighborhoods nowadays? Well, the truth is, I was living here in Washington Heights a few years ago. I walked outside my building on the corner of 186 and Laurel Hill Terrace, and lo and behold, one of my neighbors, front of 90 Laurel Hill, is standing there with a big python wrapped around his shoulders. And, I don't know, I guess the wife has a nice pet in his apartment. But aside from Washington Heights, or maybe aside from that corner in Washington Heights, there's not much of a problem with snakes today in people's apartments, obviously. So that reason we'll have to see if that's still relevant today. Other reasons given in the Gemara are as follows. There's a concern maybe that they will coagulate the cheese by using vinegar that comes from forbidden wine. That's a concern. That's another concern in the Gemara. Or perhaps the Gemara says that maybe they will use the skin from the stomach of a calf, which is not kosher. It's not kosher. We said earlier that the way to coagulate milk is you take, let's say, the enzymes that are found in the lining of the stomach of a calf, contains enzymes, chymosin and renin, you use that to coagulate the milk protein, the casein in the milk. So the non-Jews will coagulate their milk into cheese by taking the non-kosher animal skins that they have in their backyard. And finally, the Gemara has one other concern. And that is, the Gemara says that the cheese has in it, again, in the holes in the cheese, it has some liquid milk. What's the concern there? So if you look at Rashi, number 5, Rashi says, what does this mean? You can't have cheese without little bits of milk inside the cheese. So Rashi says, that means is, ben guma shel gvina, in the holes of the cheese, nishar min hapala, there's some milk that's left over that didn't coagulate. What's the problem with that? The chalav shechalavo ovei kochavim, the ein yisrael ro'ehu, milk that is milked by a non-Jew, which a Jew did not watch, is also is forbidden. Why? Dilma arav bechalav tamah. Maybe it has trach milk mixed in there. And the trach milk's not going to coagulate. And if you mix the kosher milk and trach milk together, the trach milk will be left over in the cheese and inside the cracks of the holes of the cheese. And that's why you can't eat the non-Jewish cheese. Okay, so the conclusion of the Gemara is you have all these different possibilities, different opinions why you can't eat non-Jewish cheese. Either because we're worried about maybe they allowed their pet snakes to deposit venom into it, maybe they coagulated it with non-kosher animal skins, maybe they coagulated it with non-kosher vinegar, or maybe Rashi says there was some non-kosher milk in their milk that did not coagulate that's left inside the cheese. Okay, so this is the discussion with regard to non-Jewish cheese. The question is, halacha l'maaseh, what do we do when it comes to cheese? Obviously, some of these reasons, like the snake reason, is not so relevant today. So, does that have any bearing on the halakha l'maisa or not? So, Tosfos in Avodah Zarah, source number 6, we don't need the bulk of that Tosfos, it's just there to intimidate people, I'm sorry. The Tosfos there, a few lines that we will pull out of this Tosfos. Tosfos there says the following. He says, he thinks, halakha l'maisa says Tosfos, what's the real reason why the Gemara forbade the use of non-Jewish cheese? It's because of this concern that snakes would deposit venom in the cheese. So if that's so, says Tosfos, then there should not be a problem today with cheese of a non-Jew. And Tosfos says further, why am I not worried about non-kosher milk being used to coagulate the cheese? So Tosfos says, well, like we said earlier, non-kosher milk doesn't coagulate. What guy is going to use non-kosher milk to make cheese? He knows it's a lost cause. So he's not going to mix in non-kosher milk to his milk that he's trying to make cheese out of. And finally, says Tosfos, if you look at the bottom of that Tosfos there, Tosfos says, second last line there, Tosfos says, actually we should read a little before that. Tosfos says, start from the fourth last line. Ela vadai. And a little bit into that fourth last line. Ela vadai ein hatam ela mishum nikur. The real reason why the Gemara said you can't eat non-Jewish cheese is because of the snakes putting their venom in the cheese. The anu she'ein lechashem etzuyim beinenu. We don't have snakes around today. Ein lochash mishum gila. There's no concern of snake venom in our cheese, obviously. So there's no problem with it. The ein lomar de dover she'beminyan hu. Don't tell me, says Tos, this was a gezeir passed by the Sanhedrin, and you can't just, you know, knock it off because you think it's not relevant today. Maybe you need another basin of equal stature to repeal that gezeira. Says Tosfos, no. Certainly, when they prohibited the cheese of non-Jews, they only prohibited it in a place where there's concern of snakes. It's a valid concern. Today we have no snakes in our neighborhoods. No problem with non-Jewish cheese. Tosfos then concludes in the second last line, he says, V'gam v'harbe mekomos yesh, and in many places there are people, says Tosfos, she'ochel mosam, who eat the non-Jewish cheese. Why? Mipnei she'ma'amidin osam biprachim, because they use, not, let's say, animal skins to coagulate the milk, they use plants to coagulate the milk. How do you use plants to coagulate milk? So, apparently, there are certain plants that have chemical properties that will also cause the milk to coagulate. The thistle flower is one, which is used in Portugal, maybe other places in Europe, to create a certain type of cheese. I think historically in Britain, people used artichokes to coagulate milk. Never tried it, but if you do, maybe you should just clear with everyone else in the house, they don't mind you fermenting their milk with artichokes. But apparently artichokes is a type of plant that was used to coagulate milk into cheese. So Tosfos says, there are places where they know that the goyim use plants to coagulate the milk into cheese. So therefore Tosfos says, if you know that they use kosher ingredients, like plants, to coagulate the milk, you know there's no snakes around, you know there's no mixture of non-kosher milk in there, because who's going to put non-kosher milk into a cheese mix if it's not going to coagulate? Tosfos says there's no problem eating non-kosher, non-Jewish cheese. Now obviously this opinion of Tosfos is somewhat theoretical, because today's cheese production involves many other problems, kashrus-wise, aside from the actual raw ingredients that are used. Today in cheese production, they keep the curds in a brine bath that might have been used for non-kosher cheeses. There's all sorts of other concerns. Enzymes that they use have to be kosher. So today, practically speaking, this obviously would not be relevant. But Tosfos is saying, if the only concern was the guy using his non-kosher animal skin to coagulate the milk, and the snakes dropping their venom in the milk, if you know that they use a kosher coagulating catalyst, there's no problem. However, the Rashba disagrees. In source number 7, the Rashba says no. Rashba says, even if you tell me there's no problem in European neighborhood, there's no snakes around, they're using thistle flowers to coagulate their milk into cheese, they're not mixing any non-kosher milk into the cheese because it's not going to coagulate, everything is kosher, there's no problem, Rashba says, still you cannot eat cheese made by a non-Jew. Why not? So the Rashba says, in source number 7, in Taras Habayis, Rashba says, Isser Zeshel Gvina, this Isser of cheese, Afilu bin Komos Shemin Hagan, even in places where the custom is, Shelo Lahamid, the Orkeva, not to use the trafe animal skins to coagulate the milk. For example, Rashba says, in our region, they use these plants or these flowers that are even cheaper than animal skins, so of course they're going to be more inclined to use the cheaper method. So Rashba says, even so, he says, and there's no concern of snakes, there's no concern of trafe milk mixed in. So Rashba writes, he says, Afilu Haki in the second last line, Gevina Shalahem Asura. You cannot eat cheese made by a non-Jew. Why? Because the stomach and also, the assumption is that Kol Dover Shene'esar B'Mishnas Ein Ma'amidin, whatever the Gemara in Avodah Zarah in the second paragraph decrees is forbidden to eat, it is a Gzeirah, it is a Dover Shene'esar B'Minyin, it was prohibited by the Sanhedrin, and or by a Beis Din of significant numbers and significant stature, and any gezeirah that was passed by such a Beis Din, says Rashba, even if the reason is not relevant today, to Dover Shem Aminyan, you can't just repeal the gezeirah because the reason is not relevant. So the bottom line is you have Machlokas, Tosfos, and Rashba. The Gemara said you cannot eat cheese made by a non-Jew, based on a number of possible reasons, concerns. Tosfos says, well, great, today the reasons are not relevant anymore. So Tosfos says, wonderful, you can eat the non-Jewish made cheese. The Rashba disagrees. Rashba says, no. Even if you know that the goy has used only kosher catalysts to coagulate his milk, there's no snakes around, there's no trafe milk mixed in there, you cannot eat the non-Jewish made cheese, because once the gezeirah was passed, you can't just simply repeal it because you think it's not relevant anymore today. That is a very, very important machlokas rishonim. And we paskin, like the Rashba, we paskin in Shulchan Aruch, source number 8, Yerodea Simon Kuf Tesvah, Sif Beis. We paskin, like the Rashba, that the cheese of Goyim, Asrum, they prohibited the consumption of this cheese, because they used to make the milk coagulate by putting in a trafe animal skin. Even if you use the thistle flower, the artichoke, whatever you want to use, the plants that are kosher to coagulate the milk, still it is forbidden to eat that cheese. So halacha l'maisa, any cheese that has a reliable hashkafa on it, the hashkafa obviously ensures that a Jew was present at the time the milk was coagulated. It's machlokas acharon, and whether the Jew has to actually put the rennet in the milk himself, or whether he has to just watch the rennet being put into the milk himself. The truth is today, so of course it's very relevant, because today we usually do not use animal skins to coagulate our milk in the big cheese factories. It's not... I guess it's more affordable to do it with microbial rennet. Microbial rennet is a genetically engineered or produced microorganism that they produced in labs to coagulate the milk. Pretty powerful stuff. The statistics that I saw said that you use only about 50 milliliters of rennet to coagulate 1,000 pounds of milk. And it takes anywhere from 30 minutes to 36 hours, depending on the type of cheese you're making. It's pretty potent stuff. So the halakha says that you have these 50 milliliters of rennet, even if it's microbial rennet, it's not animal-derived rennet, the mashgiach, or the shomer Torah mitzvah, who's there, has to either oversee the addition of the rennet to the milk, or himself has to put the rennet into the milk. The question of Gvinas Akum is very relevant for another issue. What about not hard cheeses, but softer cheeses? Cottage cheese, farmer's cheese, cream cheese. Those obviously have a different texture than the hard cheese does. And the halacha may be different. Why? Because today, let's say on cottage cheese that has an OU on it, there most probably is not a shomer Torah mitzvah who is curdling that cottage cheese. And the policy of OU is to allow cottage cheese made by a non-Jew to be kosher. What's that based on? What happened? It's cheese. It's coagulated. What happens to Gvinas Akum? Why don't you require shomer Torah mitzvah to coagulate the milk into the cheese? So the distinction is based on the following. Because in cheese making, there are two types of cheese. There's the hard block of cheese, Munster, mozzarella, cheddar. And then there's the softer cheese, farmer cheese, cottage cheese, cream cheese. And there's a difference in how the two are produced. The harder cheeses are rennet set cheeses, which means that they are coagulated, the milk was coagulated by using rennet, which creates a harder cheese. The softer cheeses are what we call acid set cheeses. They're not coagulated using rennet because they're much softer, they're not hard. What produces the softer texture of those cheeses? It's the acid fermentation of the milk that produces the cottage cheese, the cream cheese, the soft type of cheese. How does that work? The reason that works is because the casein protein molecule in milk, which we said is what solidifies to cause to create cheese, that casein protein only stays liquid in a pH solution above 4.6. Once you drop the milk's acidity to below 4.6 pH, then the casein molecules start curdling. Right? Classic Miss Muffin and her curds and whey. What's that? That's basically, she let her milk sit out in the hot sun. It fermented. When the milk ferments, the bacteria grows in the milk. It turns the lactose milk sugar to lactic acid. That acid in the milk then drops the pH level of the milk below 4.6. And the acid causes this fermentation to create your curds, which is the solidified casein part of the milk, and the whey, which is the liquid stuff. So today in production, producing cottage cheese or other soft cheeses, they do just that. They add in some acid, phosphoric acid, acetic acid, citric acid. They add in some acid that lowers the acidity level, lowers the pH level of the milk below 4.6, and it causes the milk to coagulate into that small, soft cottage cheese texture.
And they're not being mamid at Mekeva at all.
Right, correct.
So but it seems that even according to the Shitas Machmiras that the Rashba cited should not be included.
Because milk that is Shita can never be made through Mekeva.
It's not made through Mekeva at all.
Right, that's exactly where Moshe's Svar is. If Moshe has a Tshuva to Rav Shimon Schwab, Rav Schwab, when he was still in Baltimore, I think, sent to Moshe a Tshuva, he asked Rav Moshe, people are eating cottage cheese, it's Gvinas Akum, what should I do? So if Moshe responded, you don't have to protest, he said. Because he says he thinks that the only gzeira in the Gemara that prohibited the cheese of a non-Jew is the hard rennet cheeses. That's a gevin that you have to put rennet into the milk to coagulate it. That a Jew has to do. But says Rav Moshe, the soft cheeses, the acid fermentation cheeses, the acid set cheeses, those theoretically, you don't need rennet, you don't need to do anything at all. You let it sit out. It doesn't have a rennet fermentation. It's only an acid fermentation. It's a totally separate type of cheese. That says Rav Moshe is not considered cheese. And that is not included, according to Rav Moshe, in the Gezeira of Gvinas Akum. Rav Schechter Shlita also noted that logically he said it's difficult to even entertain the possibility that cottage cheese should be subject to the prohibition of Gvinas Akum. Because how does this cheese form? You let the milk sit out in the heat. And it, naturally, bacteria, acid produces itself. So you didn't do anything. So how can you tell me that the gezeira of Gvinas Achim extends to cottage cheese also? No one did anything. No one made any cheese. So how could you even think that the gezeira would include Gvinas Achim, which is cottage cheese? So for that reason, Rav Moshe holds that, strictly speaking, soft cheeses, acid-set cheeses, are not included in the prohibition of gezeira Achim. And the OU therefore gives their hashgacha to Friendship, Axelrod, whatever other cottage cheese brands there are that are not Gvinas Yisrael, because they feel that it does not require Gvinas Yisrael. Now it's interesting, Rav Moshe himself in his tshuva wasn't enthusiastic about allowing this l'chachila. He says, don't publicize this hefter that you can, you know, have non-Jewish cottage cheese. He said, you don't have to scream and yell against it, let it happen if it's happening, but don't publicize the hefter. But the OU's poskim feel that the hefter was in existence even before Moshe's tshuva was written, based on Rav Henkin's psak halacha, along these lines, that the soft acid set cheeses were never included in the Issur of Gvinas Achim. Okay, so now we've seen, with regard to cheese, prohibition in the Gemara against eating non-Jewish made cheese, the accepted psak halacha in America today that it applies only to hard rennet cheeses, not to soft acid set cheeses. And the halacha that we saw, which is critical for our purposes today, also is the machlokas Rashba and Tosfos, that even if the reason of the gezeira against rennet cheeses of a non-Jew doesn't apply, you still cannot eat the non-Jewish cheeses, because once the gezeira is made, you can't repeal it, even if the reasons don't apply anymore. Yes?
So the OU on cheese made by a non-Jewish manufacturer certifies what?
The OU certifies cottage cheese or cream cheese.
But what does it indicate?
Made by non-Jewish manufacturers. So that indicates that all the cultures that are used to coagulate the cheese, and that the ingredients used, the enzymes and the emulsifiers and whatever else they throw into that mix, the kalim they used to make it on, is all made by, you know, by with kosher ingredients.
So we still need hashgacha.
100%, 100%, because today's food manufacturing is so much more complex than it used to be, that they have so many enzymes and tricks they can pull with the food manufacturing that you don't yet to have hashgacha on almost on certain of those products.
That's not the exact
question.
I'm sorry?
Another basic question.
Yeah.
Some of us here may not know. Why is it that granted, even from an non-kosher animal, is usher? Because let's say an animal, a horse, were to sneeze, and as gross as it sounds, that mucus, we would be allowed to eat that, right?
You can't, the Gemara says you can't eat anything which comes from a non-kosher animal. Hayotzim et tamei tamei. Anything which is extracted from non-kosher animal is trade.
Secretions.
Yeah. Right. The Gemara says, less at siren verotvan, and even the gross stuff, right, whatever you want to call it, is usher.
And the excretory product?
Well, once you get to excretory components, Kirsha Ba'alma, the Gemara says, is not considered food. That's a separate distinction. If it's not considered food at all, then maybe you can say it's not royal lachila, it's not considered food, it might not be trade. That's a separate area which I didn't go into. Hopefully it shouldn't be alachola maisa, so we won't get sued further. Yes? Excellent question. Why is the rennet not bottle b'shishim? Especially since it's 50 milliliters to 1,000 pounds of milk. It certainly sounds like it's bottle. So the answer is that in halacha, something which is a dabar hama'amid, since it has such an influence on the product as a whole, it changes the milk from liquid to solid, it's not bottle, because it changes the whole form of the milk. It itself is so powerful that it has an effect on the whole container of milk, so it's not considered bottle.
Cheese might need hashgacha because we don't know what's in it, soft cheese, but it's not because of the gezeira.
Correct. The cottage cheese is all need hashgacha, cream cheese all need hashgacha, but for other issues, ingredients, other cautious concerns, the kalim they're made on, but not because of this gezeira of Gvinas Achim that it has to be made by a Jew. For that reason, as long as it's made with kosher ingredients, kosher kalim, and the OU checks on that to ensure that compliance is met, it doesn't have to be made by a Jew per se. Yogurt is the same thing. Yogurt, OU yogurt, same idea. It's softer type of cheese, or milk product, let's call it. And it's coagulated with also, I guess, a fermentation process. Has the OU, doesn't have to have a Jew making it, but it has to be certified. The flavors are all, ingredients in the kalim are all kosher. You ever wondered why on your yogurt sometimes you'll notice they proudly proclaim, you know, live and active cultures, which trying to eat it is a little disconcerting. You know, something live and active inside my yogurt. What that means is that they use these bacteria, microorganisms, they call them LBST, what's it called?
Lactobacillus.
Lactobacillus It's got the Latin name to it. Streptococcus thermophilus, I think it's the other one, right.
But this is one.
Okay, it's STLV. Those are live and active microorganisms that are alive and well, Baruch Hashem, in your yogurt to make sure that it ferments properly.
But this is what makes the yogurt healthy, also having those live bacteria.
Oh, really?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Never thought live and active is healthy, but okay. I guess that's why they're probably propagating on the containers there. Okay, so that's the microorganism that causes the bacterial fermentation of the milk product to yogurt. Okay, we have to move on. Now coming back to milk. So we've seen the discussion with regard to cheese. And halacha ma'aseh by cheese, we saw that even when the reasons of the gezeira do not apply, the hard rennet set cheese is still usser. What about by milk? That's the big question. By milk, if you can argue that by milk, the reason of the gezeira does not apply, does that mean that the whole gezeira is no longer relevant anymore? Do we say, well, by cheese, the gezeira is relevant no matter what the reason is, whether it's applicable or not, so milk also? Or do we say milk is different? Maybe milk, even if the reason does no longer apply, maybe the gezeira then also doesn't apply. Or maybe not. Maybe if the reason doesn't apply, the gezeira still applies. What's the halacha by milk? That's the question we have to deal with. So Rav Vaz in source number 9. Rav Vaz in source number 9 was asked, what's the halacha with milk by a guy when a Jew is not watching? And says Rav Vaz, you know for sure that there is no trace animal in that vicinity where he's milking his cow. Not in his pen, not in his yard. You check, there was no trace animal there. Can you? But bottom line, says Rav Vaz, you didn't see the actual milking of the cow. So is that milk forbidden to drink or not? What's the halakh? Do we say the gzera is still in force? Or no, the reason's not relevant. I know he's got only cows in his backyard, so I can drink the milk. So Rav Vaz answers, second paragraph in source number 9, Tshuva hadavar borer, the matter is certain, ki hagvina nesro b'minyan. Only cheese, he says, was forbidden by the Beis Din based on the reasons they gave at that time. Avalo came the chalav shechol v'nachri, but not so by milk by a guy, says Rav Vaz. That they prohibited, he said, only because they were concerned there actually was a tummy animal, trade animal that they would use for the milk to mix together. And Rav Vaz says, therefore, if the reasons for the gzeira of milk are not relevant, then you should be able to drink the milk by a non-goy if you're certain that it came from a kosher animal. And Rav Vaz brings a proof from the following Gemara, very important Gemara. The Gemara is in source number 10. The Gemara says, when the Mishnah tells us that milk that was seen by a Jew as it was being milked is permitted, so the Gemara says, we know that already. Why? The Tana Rabbana, we learned in the Brayos, source number 10, the Gemara says, Yoshev Yisrael b'tzad edro shel obed gavavim, a Jew can sit by the yard of a guy, by the farm of a guy, the obed gavavim choleg lo omegi lo ha'eno choshesh, and the guy can milk the cow for you and bring you the milk, and you don't have to worry about drinking that milk, it's fine. Why? The Gemara asks, what's going on? If there's no tummy animal in the guy's yard, so it's obvious you can drink the milk. It's obvious you can drink the milk. The Gemara says, no, even if there is a tummy animal in the guy's farm. And the Gemara says, in the second line there in source number 10, in the middle of the line, La'olam de'ika dar tummy, even if there is a non-kosher animal in the guy's farm. B'chikai chazile, and from your position, were you to stand up, you can see what the guy is doing. But if you're sitting down on your chair, you can't see him milking the cow. So you might think, well, right now in my sitting position, I can't see what he's doing, so maybe the milk is usher because he might have switched it. So the Gemara says, no. Since the guy knows that if you stand up, you can see what he's doing, he's going to be too afraid to pull any shit. Even if he has a camel in his backyard there, he's not going to switch the kosher milk for the non-kosher milk because he knows you can see him at any given moment. So it's an amazing Gemara. The Gemara says, two things the Gemara really tells us. The Gemara says that if you know the non-Jew has no trace animals in his farm, then of course you can drink the milk. And even if he has a trace animal in the farm, says the Gemara, but where you are sitting, the guy knows that even though right now you can't see him, but at any given moment you might stand up and see him, that is enough of an intimidation tactic that he's not going to pull any fast tricks and switch the milk for non-kosher milk. So Rav Vaz says, we see very clearly in this Gemara, that as long as you have the ability to, at any given moment, to stand up and say, I see you, and he knows that, he's not going to pull any fast ones on you, and you can drink his cow's milk. So Rav Vaz says in his halachic shayla, where you know the guy has no trace animals on his farm also, you know for sure there's no trace milk there, he would be allowed to drink the milk of the goat if the goat milks from his cow, says the Radbaz. Questions? Okay. That is the sheet of the Radbaz. The Pirkharish as well, working with this approach, tells us in Simon Kuf Tesvav, source number 11, Pirkharish says that the bottom line rule he writes is that in a city where you know there's no Kalas Tami, there's no trait milk in this town. Or he says, if you know that the trait milk is more expensive than the kosher milk, imagine that. If you know the trait milk is more expensive than the kosher milk, and there's no reason the guy would put trait milk in the container that you want to buy. So the Pirkharish says, then you can buy the milk that the guy milks himself without the Jew washing it. Because you know there's no way that he's going to switch it for trait milk. Pirkharish writes, this was the minhag, he says, in Amsterdam. This paper was published in the 1690s, I think. So he's writing in 1690s, he says that in Amsterdam the minhag was, and he says that they knew there was no trait milk around, or they knew that nobody would substitute trait milk for kosher milk because it was more expensive. The minhag was to drink regular chalav akum. Pirkharish says, I myself, he says, I also followed that minhag. He says a few yachidim, you know, didn't drink the non-Jewish milk. But in a city where there is non-kosher milk, there, says the Chiddush, of course, have to watch that the milk was milked under the supervision of a Jew. Okay, so we have the Heter of the Radbaz and the Pirkharish. What essentially do they say? They essentially argue that unlike cheese, where the Gezeirah prohibiting consumption of non-Jewish cheese is relevant, whether the reasons are still applicable or not, but when it comes to milk, the prohibition against non-Jewish milk is only enforced if the reasons, the concerns are still relevant. Therefore, say the Radbaz, says the Pirkharish, if you know where you are, there's no non-kosher milk available. Or the Pirkharish even adds, if the non-kosher milk is more expensive than the kosher milk, then there's no reason to think that they would in a million years switch it on you, you can drink the non-Jewish owned milk that was not milked under a Jewish supervision. That's the Radbaz and the Pirkharish. Comes the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer disagrees. The Chassam Sofer writes that he thinks that milk that was not milked under Jewish supervision is a gezeira that one cannot consume it, regardless of what the reasons that were once relevant are still relevant or not.
So what does it do with the proofs that the Radbaz cited?
Good question. What does it do with those proofs that the Radbaz cited? He proves from Rashi and from the Ramah that we treat it as a gezeira, which is not relevant, so which is stays relevant regardless of the reasons being relevant or not. So you're asking, but the Gemara seems to indicate that if there's no chashash, then it's not a problem. So the Chassam Sofer probably, I don't recall what he says explicitly, but he probably would limit that Gemara to the case where you're sitting right outside the fence. Now, so he would argue that, yeah, if you're sitting outside the fence of the farm and you can stand up at any given moment, then you can be mocked to that milk. But he says that even in a town, let's say, where there's no trait milk available, he holds that the gezeira is still in force, still in effect. He writes, interestingly enough, he says, and even if you want to assume that perhaps the gezeira is not relevant anymore, the bottom line, he says, the minhag has always been to drink Chol Yisrael, he writes. So even if you'll tell me, this is very ironic, he says, I think personally that the gezeira is an issur drabanan on drinking non-Jewish milk, is relevant today like it was 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 1,000 years ago. So even if you argue that there are some opinions who say that the gezeira is not relevant anymore, bottom line, the minhag has always been to drink only Chol Yisrael. And ironically, he says, what that means is that if you say it's a minhag to drink Chol Yisrael, he says the minhag has the stringency of a d'oraisa. He says, according to me, I hold that the gezeira is still in effect, it's an issur drabanan. But if you hold that it's mutter, strictly speaking, but the minhag has always been to drink Chol Yisrael only, so it's an issur d'oraisa now to change that, because you're violating the minhag, the nezer. But either way, the Chassam Sofer says that the bottom line in his opinion is that the gezeira against consuming non-Jewish milk is relevant today, regardless of the reasons that were given at the time of the gezeira. Okay, all this brings us now to our more contemporary poskim. And here we have Rav Moshe's famous tshuvas. Rav Moshe writes the following in Yeridea Chelek Aleph, source number 11, source number 13. Rav Moshe writes, aside from the Pirkharish, says regardless of whether you think that the gezeira is in effect or not. Regardless of whether you think that if there's no available treif milk, I can drink the milk or not. Forget the Pifarish for the moment. He says, Rav Moshe writes, that he thinks, what is the requirement of Chol Yisrael? The requirement of Chol Yisrael is that you should see the milk so that you can know that it was kosher milk. So if Moshe says, if you have certainty, certain knowledge, you know that this milk is cow's milk, that's just as good as if you saw it. Just as good as if you saw it. Says, if you saw it, yediyah is like re'iyah. Knowing that it's kosher milk is like you saw it being milked yourself. So Moshe writes, since today he says there is government regulations, was it FDA? Who's in charge of these things?
FDA.
FDA supervises and visits the factories, the production facilities, to ensure that there is no mixtures of anything other than cow's milk in regular milk. And if they find that a company has been violating that policy, they will shut them down, they will fine them. So if Moshe writes that he thinks that for that reason, today in America, he says, the fall of our companies, as he calls it, the commercially produced milk is treated, it's not really technically Chol Yisrael because the Jews didn't see it being milk, but it's treated like Chol Yisrael. It's as if you know, since you know for certain that it's kosher cow's milk, it's as if you saw it being milked yourself. So if Moshe writes, he says, this is not included in the Isra of Chol of Akum. He says, so if somebody wants to be lenient, you have a tam gadol, you have a very strong reason to do so, and you're allowed to be lenient, says Rav Moshe. However, Rav Moshe says, Bali Nefesh min aroy lahachmir, those who are, I guess, Bali Nefesh, it's a vague term, maybe spiritually sensitive, I'm not exactly sure how to translate Bali Nefesh, but those who are Bali Nefesh, Rav Moshe says it's fitting to be machmir, and he says, I am also machmir. Rav Moshe Tendler told me that he remembers in Rav Moshe's refrigerator, there was one container of milk for Rav Moshe himself, and then the rest of the family had regular milk. So he said Rav Moshe wasn't even concerned about imposing this chum on his family members per se. He just himself, he was machmir for it, and he recommends in his tshuva that it's fitting to be machmir. Rav Moshe later, in a later tshuva, source number 15, source number 15. So this was a tshuva written, I think it was also written in the 50s.
By economic
pressure? He writes there about yeshivas. He was asked about yeshivas, do they have to buy Chol Yisrael for their students? And Moshe writes, even though the yeshivas are having a difficult time financially, he says, and even though the milk was a little more expensive, and it's going to create a large financial difference for the yeshiva over the course of the whole year, buying such large amounts of Chol Yisrael, and Moshe says that the yeshiva should still buy Chol Yisrael because it's part of the chinuch of the children, that they should see how to be careful with yisurim. So even though he himself said, me'ikar adin, he felt that it's mutter, he himself was machmer, and he even insisted, although he doesn't say you are chayav to do so, but he said that it's kedai lahachmer, that yeshiva also should expend a significant amount of money to buy Chol Yisrael, to show children how to be careful with yisurim. There is a much more recently published tshuva of Moshe, which was written in the 70s, where Rav Moshe writes that his hefty was Bishas Hatzak. He says someone was living out of town, Chol Yisrael is not so readily available. That's what he said, you can comfortably sum up on his hefty. But he felt that otherwise you should be machmir for Chol Yisrael. Now, granted, in the earlier tshuvas, he doesn't use that terminology, Bishas Hatzak. So it's a little ambiguous what exactly his guidelines were for, you know, when he feels you really should be machmir, or really could be Mako, but one thing is for sure clear. Moshe held that Me'ikar Adin, it was not a problem. He certainly held that it was appropriate and even advisable under many circumstances to be Machmir. Make one last note, which is that the Chazon Ish also, source number 14, the Chazon Ish as well, in discussing powdered milk, an issue we didn't have time to touch upon, powdered milk is an issue dealt with in the Poskim also, whether you can use powdered milk made from non-Jewish milk. So Frank has a tshuva on that, on powdered milk imported from America to Israel. Now, the advantage of powdered milk is that it has a very, very long shelf life. Skim milk that has been turned to powder can last for up to 3 years on the shelf. So I guess we can rest assured knowing that we eat our bakery products with powdered milk and then they've been there for a very long time. But the powdered milk lasts for a very, very long time. For that reason, the poskim deal with the shalot powdered milk. Can that be made from non-Chol Yisrael milk? So the Chazon Ish, his discussion of powdered milk, writes in source number 14 that when there is pikuach hamemshala, when there is government supervision on the milk to prevent any other adulteration with it, and they can be punished if they do violate those regulations, he writes, yesh makom lomar. There's room to say that you don't need chalav Yisrael per se on government-supervised milk. Now this comes, the Chazon Ish, interestingly enough, has been subject to some controversy in later generations. The Chalkos Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov Breish of Switzerland, writes that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik of Zurich, Switzerland, told him that he once said to the Chazon Ish, people said that you're Matir Chalav Akum. The Chazon Ish said, what else are they going to say? I'm Matir Eishes Ish too? So you ask yourself, one second, the Chazon Ish did write here, you know, you see it in the source number 14, it's on the paper here, right, that there's a svar to say, there's government supervision, that maybe it's permitted. So the Chalkos Yaakov suggests, well, he just meant yesh makom lomar, that there is room to suggest it, but he didn't really feel that way, halacha lemaisa. It's also true in the Shevet Halevi, one of today's elder poskim, Rav Vosner, who writes that, yes, I know the Chazon Ish says that when there's government supervision, there's no problem with Chalav Akum, Chalav Yisrael. But you should know, he says that 25 years ago, in 1952, he's referring back to 52, he says, Chazon Ish asked me if I agree with this Heter Halacha L'maisa, and I told him that I don't agree with it. Okay? So I'm not sure exactly what he means to say by that. Does he mean to say that the Chazon Ish therefore accepted that? But the bottom line is the Chazon Ish still published this. So, despite the questions that have been raised, the Chazon Ish bottom line does suggest that this Svar of Rav Moshe is valid halacha l'maisa, that there would be room to be matir, non-Jewish supervised milk because of the government supervision. So therefore, to wrap up this particular part of the shiur, we don't have much time to go further, but in conclusion then, we saw the reasons for two different gezeiros in the Gemara, the reason to prohibit milk that was not milked under Jewish supervision, and the reason to prohibit cheese that was not made under Jewish supervision. We said halacha l'maisa, cheese that's made by a non-Jew, not supervised by a Jew, if it's a hard rennet cheese, is also to consume, even if the reasons for the original prohibition are no longer relevant. By milk, we said there is a machlokas achronim, pricharash on the one hand, versus the chasam sofer on the other, whether the gezeira prohibiting the consumption of chalav akum is relevant if the reasons are not relevant. But we said aside from that machlokas of Moshe Feinstein, and apparently the Chazon Ish also, paskin that when there is government supervision, that is reason to say that it's as if we know the milk was kosher all the way through, and for that reason they do not require chalav Yisrael on milk manufactured by companies that are subject to this government regulation. At the same time, Moshe does say that for yeshivas who are in the Chayat, their children, it is certainly very, very kedai to be machmir. And Moshe himself says it's a roi for Baal Nefesh as well to be machmir for that reason also.
But it's not ikar hadin then.
It's like, if it was an ikar, then you don't have to. It's not usur.
It's a nezer that you take on yourself.
He said if somebody knows that it's not usur and he takes it upon himself, like it might become a nezer. Right. But he says it's certainly roi and fitting for those who know Baal Nefesh.
If somebody thought it was usur and now they want to stop.
Correct. And they don't make it stop. Correct. Yes.